GPS and the information that we check, it's from the environment. From the trees, tree fruits, from the bird migrations, from the wind directions, from the cloud and sky observations, through our own cattle's observations.
To check if there's going to be rain, many of us just open a weather app or our smartphone. But herders of Africa's vast Sahel region, like Hidu Amaro Ibrahim, who you just heard there, are more likely to look at what their cattle are doing. Welcome to this latest edition of our UN News podcast, UN in Africa. I'm Natalie Hutchison, and shortly you'll be hearing from our own Yasmina Guerda, who's been reporting each day on the momentous climate change negotiations, which have been going on in Katowice, Poland at COP24. Where countries of the world are discussing how to put into practice what was agreed in Paris 3 years ago. It's not just politicians, experts, and UN officials who are there, and to get a perspective on what climate change means to people living on the edge of the interconnected online world, Yasmina spoke to Hidu Amaro Ibrahim, an expert on traditional indigenous knowledge and raising livestock where grazing land is scarce, as in the Sahel. She's from the Piolimbodo community in Chad, a group of cattle herders and nomads who turn to the environment for their most immediate needs. She's been at COP24 hoping to advance the causes and concerns that affect her region and people. She began by painting a picture of the issues Chad and the Sahel are dealing with now, how environmental degradation exacerbates their troubles, and explained the role of technology and development where she lives.
I'm coming from Mbororo pastoralist communities, who are the cattle herders and nomadic, just living from one place to another one. And we have also the semi-nomadic who are sitting in some place and who are seasonal migration. So that's also one of the things who make our life and livelihood depend from the environment. And we have like this duty to protect this environment where we depend on it. We always following the weather patterns to get the water in pasture for our cattle, and that also ensure our survival as human being.
Your community is in the Sahel. It's a region that's in the crossroads of a lot of challenges, including droughts and floods and conflict. How has your community been affected?
So from my communities, we have always that people's fighting to get access to the natural resources, and now it's become more tragic because people kill each other just to get this access. And when we see from inside, we understand because it's the survival, and everyone want to have his part, and the one who is very strong will get it before the other. And this conflict now is a fertile land for beyond the communities conflict, but political conflict and sometimes terrorist conflict. So political conflict, we have the issue of Central African Republic, where people fighting for the power, and then those who are getting the impact are my peoples, who have nothing to do with the politics, but who are getting a violence from the other communities who are fighting. And then they are forced to move, and then they have to displace and become refugee inside another countries. It's a big challenge politically, because the countries who are hosting them have also the community who are facing the natural resources issues, and then the sharing of this become a big problem, and it's become a land rights. And land rights is always a origin of many conflict around the world. And in the other hand, we have around the Lake Chad where the men do not have many activities to do. They leave women alone around the places. And then it's fertilized land for the Boko Haram issue. And when you take beyond, you go around Mali, Niger, and then you have all the other kind of traffic, human trafficking, terrorist group. So all this regional destabilization come from the lack of the resources that share between the communities. Of course, the political issues is there, but it's not too much as the environmental issues. So that make our life much harder. And then the most poor people are the most impacted from all these conflicts.
So you're saying that the climate change impacts are exacerbating all these political tensions.
Absolutely. So climate change become a big driver of those conflicts. Firstly, is the food security, where we have the evidence, all the food, UN food program, who are sending food around these places every year. The amount is becoming much huge. Intervention from other UN organization or civil society organization for the humanitarian become much bigger than the development. And when you do not have the balance between development, peacekeeping, and humanitarian, you always will get through the conflict. So that's the concern of we cannot fight climate change without encouraging the development. So we need to get the balance between development and climate change. These both have to work together. And the result of them, if they work together, it will be a peacekeeping around all the region.
So you come from an indigenous community that relies heavily on its environment and therefore protects it. The Paris Agreement does state that indigenous communities are very important to the implementation of any climate action. Do you see this reflected in practice? Do you see this importance of indigenous communities reflected in the discussions that are being held here in Katowice at the COP24?
Firstly, we are so grateful for the first time after 20 years of negotiation in Paris, we get the 5 references of indigenous peoples. Through it, we have like a result coming from the Indigenous Peoples Knowledge Platform, where we are discussing with the state parties as agenda item of negotiations, where we can contribute and how we can contribute on it. Here in Katowice in this COP24, so we discuss on how this platform can be operationalized to help the real action on ground to our peoples. The decision, it's one thing. It's a piece of advance, of course, but the action, that's where personally I'm concerned and I am worried. When we talk about climate change, it's going so fast than how we are taking decisions. So we need to see by the next SAPSTA in May to what will be the real implementations. The facilitative working group can take the work plan, and then countries can take the real activities to our communities to put our knowledge, our rights, and our full and effective participation.
Sorry, would you mind explaining for people who maybe don't understand the process very well what is happening in May?
We are having in this decision a body who's calling a facilitative working group, where it will be 7 representatives from indigenous peoples coming from our 7 regions. And those indigenous people regions are different than UN regions. So for us, it's Africa, Asia, Latin American in Caribbean, North America, Pacific, Arctic, Eastern Europe, and Russia. So those 7 regions of indigenous peoples recognized under the UN as socio-cultural for us. So 1 representative of each. And then 7 representatives from the state parties coming from the 5 UN regions, and 1 from least developing countries, and another 1 from small islands. So those peoples will be the one who will put down the work plan of 3 years, where we can discuss, where we can have the knowledge exchange between indigenous peoples, local communities, other stakeholders, and the parties. So all those activities can go through the platform, and the work plan can be revised after the 3 years to see what was the gap, how we can improve it. And hopefully that as indigenous peoples, it's not to be limited only into the website or into the notebooks, but it can go translated through our communities who do not access to those kind of information, but who cannot also speak French or English or Arabic. They can just listen from our mother tongue.
In these workshops, you will be sharing information, sharing knowledge, speaking from your community. What are some of these things that you have learned to do in order to live in harmony with your environment instead of hurting it?
When a community displaced from one place to another one to found water and pasture, is a pathway that they will take. They cannot just wake up, they check the GPS and say, okay, let's go north or let's go south. So our GPS and the information that we check, it's from the environment. From the trees, tree fruits, from the bird migrations, from the wind directions, from the cloud and sky observations, through our own cattle's observations. For example, if the rain season approaching, we do not see that through our apps because we don't have those facilities. We observe our cattle. So when they come back from grazing, they just sleep and they face south. You can come and bother them and take them to another place. They always have them head facing south. And then they have the nose up, sniffling. And then we know exactly we have to move from west to the south direction. So this practice is from the centuries and it's only known from our peoples because we live on it. So it's not to be understood by the state who are taking the decisions. If they do not respect our life, if they do not protect us, we lose those knowledges and then the environment degradation will become very quick. If we wait for the technology to restore it, until when is going to confirm? We love the technology for sure, but technology that works for the peoples, not the technology that drive to make money, that can grab our land and also make a false solutions. So we don't want to have the false solution because the false solution leads us to the climate impact. Today it's our life, but tomorrow is going to be the life of those developed countries also who developing and using those big technology. So they need to think about how we can combine it to save the planet.
So then today, what is your big ask from these big national governments, decision makers, the people who actually have the power to change things? What is your one big ask on behalf of indigenous communities?
It's to listen to us, to give us voices, and to use our voices into the decision that they are taking. It is them decision, but it is our features. So we deserve to be into the table with them and decide for this feature we want.
Women in particular in your communities are acting with the environment. What is your particular ask with regards to women in indigenous communities?
They are mothers, they are nature protectors. They are medicine, they are peacekeeping, they are savers. Taking into consideration gender balance from the design of each project to the implementation. And through the decision making, that can help them a lot. Women are half human of this planet. If we exclude them or if we just have them sitting down without giving them the space to listen to them voices, so all the decision that we are going to take is going to be half. That's what we need to see and that's what they have to consider. Giving women place, it's not only sitting into the tables to count the number, how many women, how many men we have into the room, but it's how much we take into consideration what women said and what women need and how what we are doing can impact them life. So that must be consider in very high level.
You've been now participating in this COP24 for several days. Are you hopeful? Do you think this is going to achieve what it's supposed to achieve?
The first week have been very hard, but at least we get the text of the platform of Indigenous Peoples Knowledge finalized. That's one of the big news. The second is it's not a reason to stay without doing nothing. We have the Paris rule books, principles and guidelines. We have to make it right best approach to put all the 8 needs there, gender balance, indigenous people's rights, human rights, youth, just the transitions, health, education, public participations. So all those need to be considered absolutely into the Paris rule books who can lead them because those 8 elements are people's elements. It have to guide all the implementations. And we have to do that by the second week and come up with a nice COP decision, hopefully.
That was Hidu Omaro Ibrahim speaking with Yasmina Guerda of UN News for this UN and Africa podcast. I'm Natalie Hutchison. Thanks for listening.